Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. In this episode, Dorsey interviews another special guest that will give you hope and inspire you. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining Dorsey on another episode of The Dorsey Ross Podcast. As always, Dorsey will share from his heart and give you a very inspiring message. Now, here is your host, Dorsey Ross.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you again for joining me on another episode of the Dorsey Ross Show. Today we have Pastor Dell with us. He has a long history of military service along with pastoral service, and we will get his story of what he has been through and what he has done with his life. And Dell, we thank you for joining me today on the Dorsey Ross Show.
Thank you, Dorsey, for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. I greatly appreciate it. So one of the first questions I would like to ask you, Dell, is what was your life like growing up in Compton, California? How did you become a person of faith in God?
Hey, great question, Dorsey. So growing up in Compton for me was very rough. There's a couple of movies out there people may have seen. One is called Boys in the Hood, and another one is called Straight Out of Compton. So I grew up during the environment of Boys in the Hood, and my brothers and sisters grew up during the time of Straight Out of Compton. So for those that have not seen those movies, very tough neighborhoods, a lot of gangs, a lot of drugs, right? Still a lot of good people in those neighborhoods, but it was definitely a challenge, you know, growing up and just trying to make it, you know, just an everyday life and going to school. And I think for me, my faith kicked in because I had a praying mom who always prayed for us, you know, before we left out of the house to make sure that, you know, we wouldn't get hit by any stray bullets or, you know, be a part of any type of gang situation. But sometimes, Dorsey, when the gangs do certain things, they may target another group, but you just may be in that same area. And one thing when we were growing up, we always heard that a bullet doesn't have anybody's name on it. So it could easily, you know, go in a different direction and you may be a victim of what's going on. So I believe my faith definitely came from my mom just praying for us. And then she took us to church a lot. And I just had a lot of good teachers growing up as a youth from the church that really just made the Bible practical, right? It wasn't just a bunch of stories from the old time, but it was, this is how this relates to you now. So they made it seem where God could help you, even in the midst of a lot of gang activity or a lot of drug activity. So that was kind of my life growing up. You see, I went to school like everybody else. It was just, we just had a lot of violence. During the time that I was growing up in Compton, we were the fourth most dangerous city in the United States, which is never a good statistic to have. But that just makes it, you know, a little bit extra stress as you're trying to grow up.
Right. And in your life, how did you overcome adversity? What adversity did you face growing up in your life?
As a youth or as an adult?
As a youth. We'll go for the youth right now.
Okay. So as a youth, I think one of the biggest adversity was just trying not to get involved in all the negative activity, because even if you grew up saying, you know, I don't want to be a part of a gang, I don't want to be a part of selling drugs, there's still peer pressures there, right? People wanting you to join their gang, people wanting you to sell their drugs. So it was a matter of, you know, how do I say no to this stuff? But some people say, well, you just walk away and say no. But you know how peer pressure is. Sometimes it's just not that easy because the peer pressure doesn't stop on Monday, right? You have it on your way to school. You see it on your way from school. I saw it at school, you know, people selling drugs, you know, in the, on the school grounds. So the adversity for me was really just, how do you stay positive when there's so many negative things that are around you that are trying to influence you? And I think for me, one of the practical things that helped me was to be around other positive people, right? I had a group of friends that did not want to join gangs, did not do drugs. So we kind of tried to stay together to, you know, kind of help each other. Because even if you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, you could easily get jumped, which means, you know, quite a few other gang members would come and just, you know, try to beat you up just because, right? You didn't do anything to them. You didn't do anything bad. It's just people were trying to make a name for themselves. So for me, you know, it was hanging around the right type of friends that were trying to go in the same direction that I was going in.
Right. Was it those things that helped you to keep out of gangs or keep you away from joining those gangs?
That is true, Dorsey. A lot of those friends, none of them joined a gang. So we were kind of like, you know, the group that was, you know, known for trying to go to school and trying to get an education, which, you know, in certain times, you know, we were ridiculed, right? We were kind of talked about because we weren't, you know, the it group. You know, we weren't as cool as other people, you know. But it was okay because deep down we knew that as long as we stayed away from the gangs, as long as we stayed away from the drugs, we had a better chance of growing up, graduating from high school, and trying to make something out of ourselves.
Right. What made you want to get into the military and serve your country?
Great question, Dorsey. So it was about my junior year. So when you start realizing, okay, I got to get out of the house. I don't know if my dad was being honest or not, but he scared me one day when he said, hey, two men can't live in the same house. So I took that, Dorsey, as a sign. It's like, hey, you need to start planning what you're going to do after school. And I really didn't know because, you know, it was four of us. My dad only had a maybe a third grade education or a sixth grade education. My mom had some high schooling, but she had, at that time, she did not have her high school diploma. So we did not have any money. And I knew that my grades were okay, but I could not afford college. That was just not going to be an option for me. So I was trying to figure this out. I remember I ran into an Army recruiter. And I didn't know anything about the Army at that time. I had some relatives that joined, but I didn't really look at that as an option. And I just remember the recruiters asking me, hey, what are you going to do after high school? And I was like, eh, I don't know. I'll probably go to college. Even though I knew I wasn't going to go to a big college, but I just said that just so he can stop talking to me. And Dorsey, he opened up this book. He just said, pick a college. And I was like, I don't know, University of Arkansas. And he pulled open this book and showed me how much it cost to go to the University of Arkansas. When I saw those figures, it was like a light bulb went off, like, this is serious. You cannot afford this. Your parents don't have any money. You need to make some serious decisions. So after he got my attention, I asked him more about the Army and what it was like. And this is back in 1983, right? So he started talking to me about the Army, and I, you know, listened to him, and I was like, you know what? As of right now, this sounds like my best option. Obviously, I got to go talk to my parents about it, but it seemed like something I might want to do. And, you know, he said he would come over and talk to my parents. And he did, but the decision was ultimately mine. So I talked to a couple of cousins. I had one cousin that was in the Navy and another cousin that was in the Army, but neither one of them stayed for 4 years. They both got out after their initial assignment. But when I talked to both of them, Dorsey, they both said if they had to do it all over again, they would not have gotten out and they would have stayed or retired out of the military. So when they told me that, it made me really think, like, you know what? Maybe I can try that. And then I remember talking to my mom and dad and telling them that I wanted to join the Army. And my dad was okay with it. But my mom was like, I'm not sure if I'm signing something. I was only 17 at that time. You had to be 18 to sign it on your own. So my mom was not going to sign it at first, and my dad ended up talking to her by basically saying, hey, if you don't sign this now, he's going to end up signing it next year, and he's going to go. We might as well show our support early. So my mom came back and told me that, you know, even though she didn't want me to join the Army, she understood that I had to start my own life. So she decided to sign the paperwork. So in the summer of 83, I actually signed a paperwork to join the Army in the fall of the following year. So I basically knew going into my senior year that I was going to be going to the Army.
Okay. And what were your five top things that you learned from your time in the military?
Man, so the military taught me so much. If I had to think of five things that are even carrying me today that I learned in the Army, number one thing would definitely be leadership, discipline, teamwork, loyalty, and accountability. Because those five things I've learned early on in basic training, and I found out that throughout my 20 years in the Army, everything I did revolved around those five things, and they were always present no matter where I was.
And during that time, your faith stayed with you, and your faith in God stayed with you strong?
It did, because my first assignment, when I graduated from, first you go to basic training, then you go to advanced individual training, and then you go to your first assignment. So my first assignment was in a place called Kaiserslautern, Germany, and I went into the Army as a human resources person. So when I went to Germany, you know, at that time we stayed in the barracks. So for me, it was, okay, I'm over here, I'm in a foreign land. Yes, it's on an Army base, but it's still away from the United States. I need to stay grounded, right? I need to put myself in positions where I can still grow, right, as a young man. And there was a church that, you know, you had to catch the bus to get there, but I didn't mind because I didn't have anything else to do on Sundays. So as I was in Germany, I would catch the bus. It's a nice little hour and a half ride to the church or the chapel at that time. And we'd go to the chapel. And then when the service was over, I would catch the bus back. And then when I left Germany, I came to the Washington, D.C. area. I found a church on the base. And then from there, they had a guest speaker one time. And I remember this guest speaker was out of a church in Virginia. So I ended up visiting that church, and I liked it. And that's where I really, my faith took off even more, because I was going to a Bible study, but I knew kind of like all the answers. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't really new. And at that same time, I got a little bored. One of the deacons that was in charge of the youth came and said, hey, I need some help. Do you mind being an assistant Sunday school teacher? And from there, it just seemed like things opened up as to my other purpose, not just being in the military, but what do you do with your gifts outside of the military? And that's when I learned that it was time for me to be a youth director or assistant youth director at that time.
Okay. We'll get back to you being, you know, working with the church and everything a little later on, but how did you get from Compton, California to the White House Communications Agency?
So, again, joining the Army allowed me to travel, right? Went to Germany. I left Germany. I came back to the D.C. area, and I was assigned to the Pentagon, actually, which was a great assignment. And then while at the Pentagon, one of my friends, we saw an advertisement that the White House Communication Agency was recruiting. And, Dorsey, we had no idea what that was, what the group did. To tell you the truth, all we knew was if we go to this interview Friday afternoon, we could be off for the rest of the day and goof off. And that was really my motivation. I just wanted to get off of work that Friday. And I went to the interview, apparently interviewed really well, didn't hear anything. And then months later, I got a notification that said, congratulations, you're accepted to the White House Communications Agency, where you'll still be in the military. You'll be directly supporting the president, vice president, United States Secret Service, and the White House staff. And that's kind of how I got to the White House Communications Agency.
Well, What was some of the challenges flying on Air Force Two?
So one of the things when you work there, everybody has like a job that you do in D.C., but then eventually there's other jobs you have when you travel. So I started off as an operations lead, where basically you're in charge of leading the team and taking them to different places, whether it's in the United States or even in other countries. And I worked with a communications officer. So it was like my job was to bring the team in, take care of the team, and the communications officer's job was to run the whole trip and make sure all the communications were set up for the president and the vice president. So the first part of my job there, I traveled with the president. I first got there with President Bush Sr., then it was President Clinton. And I left for a year, and I came back. And when I came back, I was traveling with Vice President Gore, Vice President Cheney. And then after 9/11, they took a couple of us off of the normal travel roster, gave us some emergency training. And then we started becoming vice presidential communication response officers, which was flying on Air Force Two. So everywhere the vice president went, wherever in the world, or even throughout the United States, one of the five of us was with him at all times. And part of that job, we had to fly on Air Force Two. So some of the biggest challenges that you can imagine with any type of IT equipment, sometimes it just doesn't work. So anytime we were on that plane, even though we had other people that was responsible for it, since we were White House Communications Agency, so people would look at us first and go, hey, how come the vice president's phone isn't working? Or what's going on with this satellite phone? So that was the biggest challenge, was always making sure, you know, that that equipment was working at all times. And if it wasn't working, what was the backup plan, just in case the vice president had to make an emergency call? Because we were there not right for, you know, fun, but we're there to support him and to make sure he can talk to anybody in the world.
Well, that must have been a really interesting and exciting and maybe even scary at times experience, you know, for you to do that job.
It was, Dorsey, because in the beginning, you're excited, right? You're happy. You know that you're going to be flying on Air Force Two. But right after that, reality kicks in. It's like, oh, my gosh, if I mess this up, there's no going back, right? It's like I will let so many people down, right? You start thinking about I let the Army down, I let my family down, I let the agency down. So you really start to get into a different mindset. And I tell you, Dorsey, one thing that helped me really was my faith, because, you know, there were people that were smarter than I was. So, you know, they would know the equipment a little bit better. And so for me, Dorsey, every trip that I did, I would pray. I would be like, God, help me on this next trip. Help me to understand the equipment. Help me to lead the team. Help me to make the right decisions. I really believe that my faith grew stronger because I did not want to just depend on myself, right, to do this very important job. I wanted to make sure that I had all the help I could get. And if that was, you know, making sure that I exercised my faith, then that's what I did.
Yeah. I always, you know, wondered, and you can answer this or not, but with politicians and even with the presidents, you know, sometimes we think, you know, are they really, you know, men of faith, or are they just playing a role, you know, to get votes and whatnot? Were the men, were the presidents and vice presidents that you worked with, were they men of faith?
That's a great question. Some of them did go to church on a regular basis. Some of them didn't. But one thing that we did working for the White House Communications Agency, which is so unique, you know, you have a lot of different military members from all over the different services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and we always had one Coast Guard. And one thing, when you get to that agency, one of the things that they teach us is we're here to perform a mission. We're here to support. We were privy to a lot of personal things, but we could never talk about those things, right? Because, again, that's their privacy. We're just in their space providing the communication equipment. And one of the things that they always drilled in us was, You know, when you're in this role, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent, you know, your job is to support the office of the president. So they always made that clear, Dorsey, that, you know, regardless of how we felt or did not feel about a particular person, that's irrelevant. We were here to do a job. We were professionals. And that's how we had to carry out every single mission and every single task.
Right. What are high-performing teams and how do you consistently lead those teams?
So when one thing when you work in a job like that, even though on the outside it looks like it's very glamorous and, you know, prestigious, but I can tell you when you're on the inside, you're under a lot of pressure. This is probably one of the few jobs in the world, Dorsey, where if you make a mistake, the whole world knows about it, right? I mean, if the president or vice president is talking and that seal falls off of the podium or his microphone goes off, right? The whole world kind of sees that. So for me, as a leader of those teams, I had to always make sure, one, that I was calm and confident and knew what was going on. But not only that, I had to make sure that my team was calm and confident and always knew what was going on. So for me, to lead high-performing teams, it really, I tell people this a lot, it was really my faith, because I always went into every mission not thinking that the team worked for me, but I always went into it, Dorsey, with I work for the team, right? I had a servant leader mentality. It was like, what can I do to help you on this particular mission? What obstacles do I need to get out of your way to make sure you're successful? So what I found out was being humble and not trying to be a know-it-all, right? That allowed the team to be more comfortable, and it allowed them to come up with better ideas when we had problems that I could have ever came up with.
Yeah. What was your most challenging travel mission that you had to go on?
I think one of the biggest missions for me was when I was supporting the president. When President Clinton went to Normandy, France, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of D-Day.
Right.
And what made that trip so big was I wasn't in charge. I was an assistant. I was on my way to learning to be in charge. But the person in charge gave me a lot of leeway, and they said, hey, I want you to run this trip as if you were in charge of it, even though I wasn't. And I tell you, one of the things that we had to do was we had to put something called a logistics plan, which is the day that the president's going to be on the ground. You know, we had to put out a plan of where each team member was going to be, which vehicle they were going to be using, what equipment they're going to be taking. And if some of them had to jump right from site one to site three and site two to site four, what time were those going to happen? We're going to have people pick them up and drop them off. And I tell you, Dorsey, that was such a stressful time because everything had to be planned to the T. There were no do-overs. Whatever you put in that plan, everybody was going to have to execute it that day. And if I messed something or did not put a piece of equipment, that could have been a problem where somebody forgot that equipment and we could have failed. So for me, that trip was very hard. There was a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people on that trip. And fortunately, and I was blessed that, again, I didn't try to do everything by myself. I went to the team lead and say, hey, here's what I have so far. Take a look at it, pick it apart. What am I missing, right? What do we need to add to make sure that this trip supporting the president coming to Normandy goes off well? And like I said, I didn't sleep a lot during that trip because I was always worried and concerned of what did I forget? You know, what, and then I had to come up with a contingency plan, Dorsey. What happens if the team is on their way to take this equipment and the truck breaks down? Is there another backup truck that I can take from another place? Is there other equipment that I can pull just in case? So that trip to Normandy, France for the 50th anniversary of D-Day was definitely my most challenging trip that I ever had.
Right. How do you support a mission where failure can be seen all over the world, and what does that look like?
So I would say that you support a mission like that very carefully, right? Because the biggest thing that I learned is you can get caught up with all the pressure. And if you think about the pressure too much, it can be overwhelming. So one of the tricks that I used to do was I would always talk to my team every day. Like, we would get there, you know, maybe a week before the president or the vice president would get there. And every day I would talk to my team, how's everything going? You guys feel confident in what you're doing? Are there any problems? If there are, what can we do to alleviate those problems? And the more that I stayed in tune with the team, the more calm they remained. And if there was a day where things were not going well and they had a lot of problems with the equipment, I would just ask them, okay, right? If you were me, what would you want to order? What would you want to bring in from DC to help supplement what we already have? I would help them talk through those challenges. And as they came up with it, I would give them credit for it, Dorsey. I would say, that is a great idea. We're going to order that piece of backup equipment. We're going to order this extra console because what you said made sense and we need to have a better backup plan. So for me, it was talking with the team on a regular basis, keeping them calm, but also making sure that I implemented the ideas that they came up with. So it wasn't just me, Dorsey, but it was the whole team.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes we need to, as a leader, support, you know, those that are around us and encourage those that are around us as well.
You're exactly right. Because one thing I found out, Dorsey, is if you try to make all decisions, if you try to leave out people that can help put together a better plan, then that means that not if, but when that plan fails, you're left all by yourself to try to figure it out. But when,
yeah.
But when I included my team and we all put something together in the plan, then it wasn't just my plan, Dorsey. It was all of our plan. And if something went wrong, then everybody wanted to come in and say, no, we're not going to let this fail. Let's come up with some possible solutions, right before the president or the vice president gets here. We still have a couple of minutes. And it always allowed people to keep thinking, what else can we do?
Right. So when you retired from the military, what did you do after that? And how did you go from being, you know, in the military to being, you know, a pastor down in Maryland?
So one thing I did, even though I was in the military, I always still went to church. It was just, you know, the days that I couldn't go to church in Maryland. If we were in a city and the timing worked out well, I would go to that church in that city. And what I would do, Dorsey, is I would call like the local church in that area and kind of tell them what I did and that they had some kids they wanted me to talk to. Because one thing I always thought about, Dorsey, was I was never put in that position because it was all about me. To me, it was more about, here's a kid from Compton flying on Air Force Two, supporting the president, right? How can you inspire other kids? How can you inspire somebody else that thinks that you can't move into those types of successes? So I would visit these churches and talk to the kids, let them, you know, ask questions, and then just try to leave them with some motivating messages. So as I was doing that, I was still a part of my local church. So when it was time for me to get out of the military, one of the things I realized was this is just, even though it was exciting, it was still only one part of my life. There was another part of my life that still had to be lived. So for me, what I did was I made a plan to get out. I talked to some mentors and peers of mine that had transitioned. And I would just ask them a lot of good questions, like, you know, what did you do when you got ready to get out? What type of question did you ask yourself? And then for me, you know, it led me to working for the government. So I worked for an organization called the Defense Information Systems Agency, where they still provide IT communication support to all the different services and a couple of major agencies. But that was one part of my job. The other part was I still walked in my faith. So I went from a youth director to a youth pastor, right? From a youth pastor, I went to be an associate pastor. And again, simultaneously, while I was out of the military supporting in a government role, I also supported my community as an associate pastor, taking care of the people. So one thing I would always try to do, Dorsey, is if I had leadership skills in the military, I would try to find a way that I can use those military skills in my community.
Right. What was one of your greatest leadership challenges?
I think one of the biggest leadership challenges was always trying to figure out your team. Because when we did a lot of traveling supporting the president and vice president, it was really the same team, right? Every time you go out on a mission, it's a different group of people with different personalities and with different challenges. One thing people don't realize, when you're in the military and you're on a mission, you know, you have to do that mission regardless of the personal problems and the personal challenges that you're dealing with. So you could be on a mission and your wife could be pregnant. She might not be due for another couple of months, but that's still weighing on your mind, right? Your child could be sick, but yet you're still traveling in the military because you have a mission that you have to do. So for me, my biggest challenge was every trip that I went on, I had to relearn my team. I had to learn, what were they good at? What were they not good at? Dorsey, I had to find out, hey, are there any challenges going on in your personal life that could affect you, right, your concentration while you're on this trip? And they were honest because I was one of the few leaders that would ask those questions all the time. Because what I wanted them to understand, Dorsey, was I don't just care about you setting up this equipment for the vice president to use or the president. I care about you as a person. I want you to be successful, right? So one of my biggest challenges was always relearning my team, trying to learn what they were good at as quickly as possible so that I can reinforce that good before the president or the vice president came on that site.
Right. In the Bible, you know, it talks about we go through trials and tribulations, and I'm sure that there are a lot of things that you saw in the military and even in your life where you were like, God, why is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not personally in your life, but maybe just in this country or in this world that you saw, and you were like, God, why is this happening? How did you deal with that in your own personal life and, you know, with your faith as well, and how did you overcome that?
And Dorothy, that's a great question. That is one thing, as a person of faith and being able to travel all over the world and meet different people, I'm going to be honest with you. You do ask yourself that question, right? God, you know, why is this happening? You know, why is this thing the way it is? And it does make you think, you know, about your faith and is what you've been taught really still true? Is it still relevant, right? And for me, it was just a matter of trying to ask different types of questions, right? Instead of saying, you know, God, why are you letting this happen? I began to ask questions like, God, what lesson are we supposed to learn in the middle of this? Right? I remember, like, for me, this is outside of the military, but I was working for the government. I remember when my oldest son was born, because, you know, me and my wife got married when we got older, and we had some challenges where, you know, trying to have children at a certain time, and it just didn't work out. And even then, Dorothy, I remember just asking God, like, okay, I'm a youth pastor, right? I work with other kids, you know, why am I not able to have a family? Is it not supposed to happen? Is it not supposed to happen now? So you do question those type of things, Dorothy, because you're like, you know, am I doing something wrong, right? Am I not ready to be a father? And then I remember, as you talk about adversity, I always think about one of the biggest challenges. My oldest son was actually born with also the same day that my wife lost her oldest sister. So imagine that, Dorsey. Mm-hmm. The day that probably one of the most exciting times in your life is also the day that's also the most disappointing. And I remember you know, my mother-in-law calling me and let me know what had happened and wanted to find out, you know, how did I want to tell my wife? Do I want to tell her before or after the baby came? And she left it up to me. And I just remember saying, you know what? I don't want her to have a whole lot of stress. I'm just going to tell her afterwards. And I tell you, Dorsey, that was definitely one of the hardest conversations that I ever had to have, not just with my wife, but in my life, right? How do you tell somebody that just gave birth to their first child that, you know, one of their best friends and oldest sister just passed away? So for me, again, I just kept thinking about, you know, that military mindset. What would you do? And there's strength in numbers, right, Dorsey?
Yeah, definitely.
So what I did was I called my pastor. She invited one of my other wives' best friends from the church, and the two of them drove out to the hospital the next day. My wife's friend took the baby to another room. And then me and my pastor were in the room, my wife, and that's when we told her the next day her older sister had passed away. And I didn't know how my wife was going to react. It was just one of those things where you don't want to talk about it, but you had to let her know. And that was definitely one of those days where you just ask God, like, you know, I know they're the reason, I know they're the lesson, but I just don't see it right now. I need you to show me what that is. And I just thank God for my wife and her faith, because although she was definitely, you know, disappointed and it crushed her, the way she reacted to it, Dorsey, she had a lot of faith. And I don't think I could have reacted the way she did, being honest. That was a tough pill to swallow. But my wife, her faith is definitely rock solid. And the way she handled that to this day, always thought that. I learned a lot from her that day. You think you know a lot about a person, Dorsey, until you see them go through tragedy. And that's when you learn really who they are.
Yeah. As we, you know, finish up here, if you were to speak to, you know, someone that's listening later on, you know, whether it's from Compton, California, or from Newark, New Jersey, and, you know, maybe their mindset is, well, I'll never get out of this, you know, this situation. I'll never get out of this city, or I'll never get out of this, these gangs and whatnot.
Yes.
Now, what would you, you know, say to them to say, look, you have a lot better future than what you have now. Look at what I've done, type, you know. What would your encouragement to them be?
Wow, that's a great closing question, Dorsey, and I love that question because I lived that. So that's one of the reasons when I traveled, I would go to other churches and talk to kids. And I did go to those churches that were in neighborhoods that were like mine. And the same thing I told those kids then, the same thing I would tell somebody now is, you do not know what's in store for you, right? Jeremiah 29:11, right? God has plans for you, plans to prosper you. And the only way we're going to know those plans is if we continue to make the right decisions. We put the right people in our lives, right? And we try to stay on the right track. And I always tell people, you know, if you can just do those three things and then see where your life leads you. Because that was one of the things, you're right, growing up in Compton, I didn't see a whole lot of positive people immediately around me. So sometimes you have to look outside of your neighborhood, right? You have to go find that uncle or that aunt, right, that was successful or that did something really cool. And you ask them, what did you do, right, to, you know, become good in this profession? And then you talk to those older, you know, mentors, relatives, teachers, right? Guidance counselors. You talk to people like that and you let them know that, hey, this is what my dreams are. This is what I want to do. And some people don't know your dream, right? Just because somebody says you'll never do that, you have to realize they're only saying that from their experience. So just because they say that that can't be done, that's them saying to themselves it can't be done by them. That does not mean that it cannot be done by you. So part of what they're saying is true, right? It cannot be done by them, but that does not mean that it cannot be done by you. So I always tell those people, you know, keep looking for, you know, those people that you aspire to be, right? Know that you have gifts and talents inside of you. And believe it or not, the tragedies in the world that we come across are all part of that plan that God has to use to make us stronger, to make us humble, and to make sure that we pay it forward when we become successful.
Amen. One last question. It can be yes or no. And that is a little bit more lightness to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Are there aliens in the universe?
That's a great question, Dorsey.
Coming from a military background, are there aliens?
That is a great question, Dorsey. I can honestly say in my 20 years in the military and 10 years working for the federal government, I personally have not seen any aliens, right? But I am not an expert on that matter, so I could not say for sure that they are not, right? Because I, with my limited time on this earth and my little belief, I think it would be a hard thing for me to sit here and tell you and your audience that there are absolutely no aliens. I don't know what's totally out there. And to this day, there may be. I just don't know, and I have just not seen any.
Right. I understand that. Well, Daryl, thank you so much for joining me today on the Dorsey Ross Show. I greatly appreciate it.
Dorsey, thank you so much for having me on your show, man. I really enjoyed listening to you. I was listening to one of your earlier shows about perseverance this morning, and man, I was just so excited to meet you and to be a part of your listening audience. So thank you. I'm very humbled.
Thank you. Well, guys, thank you again for joining me on another episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much for joining us today on the Dorsey Ross Podcast. Please don't forget to check out Dorsey's website at www.dorseyrossministries.com. And also check out his book titled Overcomer, where he shares his story of what God has done in his life. You can also donate to his ministry or to this podcast as well. Until next time, God bless and have a great day. Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. Please like, share, and tell others about the show. Also, please check out the other podcast episodes. And if you would like, donate to this podcast and buy Dorsey a coffee. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.